Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website at www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. Now before we get started with our topic this time, which is going to be anger management, I wanted to thank everybody because last week my voice gave out. I had been on too many planes doing too many talks and seminars and workshops, and my voice just completely gave out, and I kept coughing in your ears. And I want to apologize for doing that, and I wanted to thank all of you who sent in a lovely email with concern and asking how I was. It was so nice of you, and giving home remedies and all kinds of nice things. And thank you very much. All the good wishes and prayers and home remedies and advice must have worked because I think I've got a voice this time. We'll find out now, won't we? So thank you very, very much. Oh, and I see a lot of you are here. And thank you for all of your interest and participation. You know what? This time, every time we announce the topic kind of in advance, and this time a great deal of interest was generated because the topic is anger management. And I always say these shows are not scripted. They are kind of organic, and they grow as people ask questions. And one of the things that happens is that we get questions ahead of time. And so I think our starting off question, just as a composite of the questions and the discussions we've already had online, is how do we handle participant hostility when they arrive hostile? You know, a lot of times people told me that gave me examples and asked if it was going to be, the show was going to talk about when people arrive hostile. They didn't get angry because of something that was said during the group or because of the discussion or because of the arguments. They came. Well, you know, it's kind of a, people are giving me an expression, this is true. I think it's an American idiom, and we, of course, are a global show. But you ever hear the expression, they arrive with a chip on their shoulder? They arrive already knowing that they're going to hate everything and be unwilling and hostile and angry and like that. Yeah, they get walked in the door like that. It has nothing to do with anything that has happened within the group, right? So how do we handle participant hostility when they arrive hostile because of prior dealing or preconceived notions? What do we do when they arrive ready to be nasty, you know, ready to fight with someone? How do we diffuse the situation? How do we get that hostility not to take hold and prevent the group from going forward and reaching their goals? You know, maybe they've come to dismantle the group. That may be one of their reasons, huh, for all that hostility. But what should we do about it? Oh, and thank you for all of your participation. You know, Laura and others are saying that you need to set clear ground rules for engagement and discussion before we start. Clear ground rules for engagement and discussion before we start. An interesting point. And, you know, we have indeed discussed ground rules before, haven't we? You know, if you would like to hear prior shows, thank you for all the returning people. Thank you to hear all the new ones. Welcome. If you would like to hear prior shows, I think I forgot to say this. They are, the last five are archived at the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. So the last five are there, the most recent five. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/ Recipe for Peace Now. So you can hear what we've said before on these kinds of topics. But, you know, Laura and others say set clear ground rules for engagement and discussion before you start. And there's agreement. There's quite a bit of agreement about that. And, for example, Turek says that he likes written ground rules. Written, get it written down. You know what I do? If I've got a group that is really kind of a wee bit hostile to each other, I do. I set the ground rules first. I explain that I'm in charge. I'm the leader. I'm the third party impartial. And we will act civilly to each other. And as we've discussed, yeah, people are saying time limits for each speaker. That's very important, to set a fair and fairly enforced time limit. That's one of the ground rules for engagement and discussion that we always have, right? We set whatever time limit we think is reasonable. And also as the leader, we ask that people take turns, that they raise their hand, that they not all talk at once. We kind of sort that out, right? And yes, and I think, and I truly think, and we've had this discussion, and I think it's worth repeating, that, and people are saying that they have all kinds of different ways to keep time. The key is to make it publicly fair. Because everybody thinks that they're not talking very long. They haven't gotten the full amount. Say it's 2 minutes. Everybody feels they haven't gotten their 2 minutes, but somebody else got more than 2 minutes. Therefore, the leader is being unfair and biased towards somebody's side, right? That's a bad thing, and that leads to more hostility and anger. So it's important to keep the time in a way that everybody can see, that everybody had a fair chance, everybody got the. And also, you know, sometimes people don't, they don't want to go over, and they need a little 15-second warning there. You know what I mean? A one-minute warning, just so that they start to wrap up and don't have to sit down in mid-sentence, right? So that needs to that limits it also, but it makes it neater. Everybody knows that we have to sum up. We have to make our point. Mm-hmm. I personally use an actual timer. Isn't that strange? But I do. I use a timer that actually ticks and that you can see and could be 5 minutes. I mean, it doesn't have to be 2 minutes, but you can actually see how much time you have left. And I reset it every time there's a speaker so that we all understand that it's fair. It's a little mechanical thing. Nobody can be cheated by it. It's fair. Everybody can see it. So set clear ground rules for engagement and discussion before we start is one way to handle participant hostility when they arrive hostile, kind of angry, and kind of unwilling. And, you know what? This is really interesting because I always say I learned something during these shows. And, yes, we are getting, by the way, thank you for your participation. We are getting a lot of agreement about set the ground rules. A lot of times I actually pass them out written, if that's important to do. And I'm going to say the words that I say all the time, and people accuse me of doing this. I'm going to say it depends. It depends on the civility of the group to begin with, whether how hotly contested the issues are, because sometimes we're all of the same mind. We just don't know how to reach the goal, so we've grouped together. And sometimes we're really kind of at odds with each other, and we need to have a compromise agreement, right? You know, it depends how complex and how, well, yeah, people are saying how hostile the group is. I suppose that's true. But each time you might reiterate them if you think that's important. You might send them by email as a little courteous reminder, remembering not to just send to the people you think have been, well, have transgressed the bounds of civil rules, but to everybody. Want to be fair, right? Want to be impartial. Yeah. And so those are important points to make, to set the rules clearly. Now, this is very interesting because I don't usually deal with groups that are on the verge of actual physical violence. But sometimes that happens, right? And it kind of depends. I've got a lot of examples here. People wanting to know how to really quell actual overt hostility and anger. People come ready for a fight is being used as a sentence. That the participants really come, not just usually the groups that I deal with, sometimes they fight verbally, which is, of course, painful and abusive and like that. I don't usually get physical fights and violence, primarily because I'm a lot of times in a business setting, in a workshop, in a seminar, in a business setting, in a mediation especially. That's not prone, really, to outbursts like that. But I can see it, and I can see that we have lots of examples, and that's where the questions have taken us. So let's talk about that. What do we do if we think that there might be an actual physical altercation, that someone's kind of very excited, and there might be, well, yeah, what are people are calling a pushing match, yeah. There might be a fight might break out. Let's face it, that could happen. So what should we do about that? Mm-hmm. You know, this is an interesting point, and I'm going to say it depends, because you know your group. You know what kind of passion they've got and how they might express it. Yeah. You know, Thomas and others are saying that in order to prevent there from being, well, an unpleasant physical altercation, that you could use a metal detector to make certain that no one has a weapon. Well, that'll certainly cut down on violence, won't there? Use one of those little handheld metal detectors to make certain that there are no weapons. Well, you know, if you need to do that, you need to do that. It depends on your group, right? Yeah, because you certainly don't want someone to pull out a weapon, for heaven's sakes. Mm-hmm. Elena and others are making a very good point also that I've never thought about. And I always say that these are educational programs because I always learn something. And thank you for all of your participation. So Thomas and others, are you actually quite a few people, have used a metal detector. You know, depending on whether they've got, well, they've got people that are prone to violence in some way, and they know about it, like gangs and things like that who might be armed. Very good point. Okay, if you need to, you need to. Elena and others are making a very good point about the Recipe for Peace Now concept of the convivial atmosphere with the food. Now, those of you who are new, and a lot of you have heard these shows before, that Recipe for Peace Now says that if you're going to have a group, you need to make it will go better, and you're more likely to reach your goals. In fact, you probably will. If you make a convivial atmosphere, and if you need a time out, it gives you something to do, right? Something to eat, something to snack on, something to keep you in the room, keep you at the party, right? And it works. It makes a convivial atmosphere. It's good for, I know the overused word, networking. But it allows you to see the others as people and allows you to get to know them and find out something in common. Right? Right. So we do a thing about food, and that's why there are two recipes at the end of this show. Because we do a lot of, well, I'm going to call them potlucks, but in some way we've gotten food into the room that we can all share. That's a good idea. But Elena and others are making the point that if you're going to have a group that you think might have a propensity, or someone in the group might actually get so excited, so hostile, and so angry that they might threaten someone else, that you should have nothing sharp to serve the food with on the counter there or the table or wherever where the food is. No knives. I didn't think about that. But, you know, it's a real good point. You don't want somebody to grab a knife or something sharp off the buffet table and use it in an unpleasant and threatening way. That's a very good point you make. Yeah. That you don't want anything sharp if you've got that kind of a group. Or you suspect that you might. You know, it depends. I've personally never had a group like that, but it depends. And if you think you might, it's a very good point. And you have to think about these things. Think about how angry they are. Mm-hmm. You know, Song and others are saying that in addition to kind of making sure that no one has metal objects in their hand, although I'm getting some examples of people throwing things. Wow. Whatever you think you need to do, think about it ahead of time. Yeah. Song and others are making the point that you need to make clear not just the rules, but the penalty for violence. Mm-hmm. That you need to show, and a lot of people are saying that you need to show that you will press charges. That's an example, that you will really do something about it. You need to show the penalty if you break the rules. Yeah, you can't just have, well, you know, most groups, you can really have rules of civility, and they don't need to know what the penalty is because they all adhere to them. They really will. But you don't know. It depends. You have to make, it's a good point. You have to make clear the penalty for violence and press charges as an example. Mm-hmm. You know, Jocelyn and others are making a good point, too, with this penalty. She's saying that you should never threaten to something that you really won't do. You think about that. Yeah. It's kind of like, well, yeah, don't threaten to do something that everybody knows that you won't do as a penalty. Yeah. You know, violence, you'll call the cops, but you won't, I don't know, do something extreme in some way. Yeah. So don't threaten to do something that everyone knows you really won't do, because then you might get kind of backed up and you might have to do it. Mm-hmm. Bad thing. Fred and others are also saying that the way to prevent any kind of violence is to hire security as a deterrent. Yeah, hire a guard. In the United States, and that happens to be who I am, but I know this is a global show, and this is probably true all over, police, real police officers, you know, actual sworn police officers that have a badge and a gun and everything, actually are allowed, at least, I wonder if this is true all over the states. People are saying that they can't hire out in some states. All right, by me at least. Police officers are allowed to hire to get extra work on their off hours by being security. And a lot of bank guards and stuff are really police officers. So yes, it is, you might need to hire someone as a deterrent. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's, and quite frankly, an off-duty police officer, because they can still call the police really, really fast, right? They have a lot of power. Mm-hmm. You know, Hilsa and others are making the point that most times groups don't really, the hostility doesn't resort to physical violence. But to be verbally hostile often is just as bad as physical. And it's harder to restrain. You know, that's a very good point. If you see a physical altercation, well, people will get up and pull the parties apart. You know, they're not all just sitting there as spectators. People will do something about it. You have a security guard, for sure they'll do something about it. But you know what I mean? It's not something that people just watch. They do something about it. They restrain the person. But verbal hostility is often just as bad as physical and harder to restrain. Yeah, because once it's said, right? Yeah, interesting. So that's why we want to enforce the rules. And Lee and others are saying that you actually enforce the rules with a whistle because it gets everyone's attention. And you remember that you're supposed to be civil. And a lot of people are telling me, and thank you for all of your participation. I just love having you here. A lot of people are saying that they not only stop the verbal abuse, they yell stop or whatever, but they do actually fine people, actually a cash fine. they make them pay an amount of money for getting nasty or for using a dirty word. Okay. Yeah. You know, just getting on the subject of having a penalty that's like a cash penalty, and you have to throw some money into the pot if you say a dirty word or you get kind of excited. You know, Grace and others are telling me that when you have that, that they make both parties pay a fine because there's been incitement too. Both of them have to pay something, whatever the amount is that's been stipulated. Yeah, because somebody incited the verbal abuse. And also, you know, that does kind of break it up. People get on a roll. They get on a tear. They start getting kind of wound up. And if you do something to stop the pattern, stop the sequence, stop the hostility, the verbal hostility, like interrupt it, blow a whistle, make them pay money, a fine, right then and there, not just on the way out, right? They have to go look for the money. They have to count it out. They have to argue that they weren't that nasty. You know what I mean? It breaks up the fight. It breaks up the abuse. It breaks up the nastiness. You know, and this is to a certain extent also true. Carter is saying that you, in order to stop verbal abuse, you embarrass the parties by showing how juvenile their behavior is. You embarrass the parties by showing how juvenile their behavior is. Yeah, you kind of hold them up to the group and say, geez, can't you handle it better than that? We don't have potty mouth around here. This is not a preschool, you see? Yeah, and Malik and others are saying that you need to remain calm and the voice of reason. And Doreen and others are saying that you cannot react in kind. Remember not to get mad and hostile and angry yourself. You're in charge. You're the leader. You're the third party impartial. You need to remain the voice of calm and reason, as Malik and others are saying. Now, this is an interesting question that is evolving. And thank you for all of your participation. And the question is really, how do we control our own hostility and anger? I mean, heavens to Betsy, we're human beings, right? How do we control our own hostility and anger? Because really, they're pissing me off. You know, it's been a long day. And we maybe didn't start out feeling kind of hostile, or maybe we did. Yeah, people are saying, thank you for all of your participation. People are saying that sometimes the group leader comes in feeling hostile and angry because they just don't like this group. It's kind of a nasty group of people, and we know it. You know, Hassan says that a lot of times you get disgusted and you want to slap both sides. Yes, you get disgusted and you want to slap both sides. But you need to take 3 deep breaths and remember to set a good example. Yes, Hassan, you're absolutely right. I'm making a lot of agreement with that. Thank you very much. That sometimes you get disgusted and you want to slap both sides. You want to at least shake them, right? Stop that. And you need to take 3 deep breaths and remember to set a good example, even if you don't want to. You are in charge. We are the third party impartial. We have to set a good example of how you're supposed to act in a civil society. Allison says that we need to remember our responsibility to keep the group on track. We have a responsibility. Hopefully we're getting paid. But we have a kind of a fiduciary responsibility. We took it on. We said we would help. We have a responsibility to keep the group on track. Yeah. And Derek and others are saying that you just can't become frustrated with the participants or with the process. And it's really frustration, right? It's not, in our part at least, it's not so much anger and hostility. It's just kind of frustration. It's like, gee, get on with it. You know, we have rules, we have civility. Keep going. But you can't become frustrated with the participants. You need to enforce the rules equally and reasonably. Mm-hmm. Equally and reasonably. Yep, can't get mad at one side either. You are the third party impartial. Got to be equal and reasonable. Mm-hmm. You know, Caroline and others, pardon me, are making a very good point that if you get a little bit of experience under your belt, experience will give you perspective. And you'll find out that sometimes, I don't know, things kind of erupt and you know what to do about it. You remain calm and you talk them down, you reason them down. And you have a good time out. Yeah. So, and that experience, pardon me, and that experience will allow us to have some perspective on whether or not this is the absolute worst group of people that we've ever seen. So, we've now talked about what happens when someone comes hostile and how to control ourselves so that we don't become hostile. So, the next question that's coming up is really how can we enforce civility in the group? What on earth should we do? You know, this show is, of course, a very practical show. We don't have rules, really, recipe for peace now, because I say it depends a lot. But we're very practical, and we don't deal just with theories of things. We want to know how to really get this done. We want to know on a very practical manner, what on earth should we do? How are we going to handle this as a practical matter? And that's the key. What can we do? How can we enforce civility in the group? I don't care if you've come hostile or not. I don't care if you still feel hostile or angry. But when you're in my group, one of my participants, we will all act in a civil manner towards each other. That's my biggest rule. I don't really have rules, but that's it. We will act in a civil manner, what my mother would refer to as ladies and gentlemen. Yes, in a civil manner. How are we going to do that? How are we going to enforce it? Well, Zama goes back to the clear set of rules equally enforced. A lot of people are sticking by that, and they're going, well, with most groups, that will work. We have a clear set of rules. They are equally enforced. And Kendra and others are saying that you stress the rules every session. Because sometimes these things go on for a while, and, yeah, you kind of say it again and again and again. And Benita and others are saying you need written rules posted prominently and distributed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, as a practical matter, James and others are saying that you could have the disruptive person removed. You could make them leave. And that's what your sponsor or your security person, if you've got one in the room, would do. You could ask them to leave. Maybe. It depends how important they are to the final outcome, to the final decisions. It's hard to add. Yes, you can. You can ban people. You can ask them to leave. Absolutely true. That's a really good point and a really valid way of doing it. Excellent idea. Pardon me. But you have to decide if that person, how important they are to the process. Because you can't ban someone who's integral, right? So it depends. But yeah, it's a real good point. Lakeisha and others have said that you reason beforehand and request civility. You kind of talk to them in private beforehand. And you say, well, you know, it didn't work out so well. And you kind of remind them that we're going to have a civil discourse. Mm-hmm. And Ted and others are saying that you stress personal responsibility. the people responsible for their own actions, their own behavior. And that's, you stress that when you're kind of talking beforehand and request civility. Mm-hmm. You know, Emily and others are pointing out that anger is really a distraction from the common goal. And therefore, when you're talking about civility, that you will explain that and explain that it just takes time and it just takes effort and it's distracting from achieving the common goal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got a lot of people kind of going, yeah, ban the disruptive individual, make them leave. And now, pardon me. Sorry about that. And we have, this is interesting, a lot of people use a device as kind of a warning signal that we will not tolerate that kind of action. And it's kind of a peer pressure thing. Let's see, we've got warning bell, a buzzer, a whistle, a gong. We have prayer timeouts. We can all be quiet, right? Prayer is a quiet act. Meditation timeouts, same idea, except that I assume that at a prayer timeout, we all pray for understanding and peace and that someone leads the prayer. Perhaps we do as the group leader. But you see, these are all ways to diffuse the situation and to distract the person from going forward with the disruptive act. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I kind of like a whistle. I must assess that, kind of a referee whistle. And also, you also can use timeouts, right, to gain control over the situation, but also to give people a time to kind of breathe and get control over their own emotions. Because a lot of times people just get excited and wound up, and they really didn't come to fight, and they don't even want to fight. It's just that they've gotten kind of excited and they're passionate about whatever the issue is. And the other person's passionate too. And one thing kind of leads to another. And we certainly don't want to have to search for weapons unless we really, really have to, right? Right. And so that's really the idea, right, of Recipe for Peace Now and the idea of having the food be something that we do during a timeout. You know, I always say that the food is not because we are hungry. It is a tool. It is a tool to get us to network, to get us to be convivial, and to kind of diffuse the situation. Give us a moment to take 3 deep breaths. Yeah. And so, okay, now I'm going to say, people are going to say, you're going to say the labeling thing. Yes, I am. Thank you for all of your participation. Pardon me, I still do have kind of a residual cough. Excuse me. And if you're going to have people come to a potluck and they're going to have food, right, it is very, very important to communicate however it is you've been communicating, email, phone, or whatever, and ask people, if they have any food allergies, food dietary restrictions, or religious restrictions about food. Very, very important, because you don't want anyone to have a bad time. Also, when you have people bring food, it needs to be labeled. Not what it's called, meatloaf. No, it needs to be labeled what's in it, so that you can make a decision whether or not you can eat this delightful thing. But you never know. You need to look at it and see what's in it. Also, I always think that you should have a safe recipe. I think also that the host should bring some extra food. I really do. I don't like to run out is the real reason. I always like to have something there, something nice to share. So, we're going to have a safe recipe. What makes a safe recipe? Well, not too many ingredients. ingredients that people are generally not allergic to, and you've checked this out with your participants. We're still going to label it, though. And also, ingredients that your people, wherever you are, will be familiar with. They'll have eaten them before. And therefore, they'll know if they can eat it or not. So, our first recipe is going to be a stir-fried chicken. Those of you who have been here before know that I'm particularly fond of stir-fries because they are something that if you have the facility in the room, you can make together as a group because they're very fast. And I'm not really advocating handing somebody a knife and chopping things. You know, you have everything prepped, and then you put it in while you're standing there. Everybody looks. It's something to participate in. They all get to eat it right away. It's all good. And also, of course, a stir-fry goes with a big container of nicely cooked rice. Mm-hmm. I actually have a rice cooker. Very convenient thing if you're going to do a lot of these. But a whole bunch of rice is a nice thing. I like it on the side because then people can take as much as they want. So here's the recipe. It's our safe recipe for this evening. We're going to have about 1.5 pounds of boneless, skinless chicken breasts. Mm-hmm. They are easily obtained here. They come packaged like that. But the key is that it doesn't have to be breast, but you want to take the bones and the skin off it. 3 tablespoons of soy sauce, which is something you'll have to check that people can actually eat. It has some salt in it and things. 2 teaspoons of cornstarch. 3 teaspoons of grated fresh ginger. Very lovely in this, and it smells wonderful. I like a little bit of sugar, like 1/4 teaspoon, just a smidge of sugar. I think that it's nice with the soy sauce. I don't know. I just like the sweet and the salt. These are all, of course, general recipes. You change them as you like. 2 tablespoons of vegetable oil. A bunch of green onions, like 6 of them. We call them scallions, that you cut into little pieces. A little, not chopped, kind of 1 inch long or something. You know, just nice sized pieces because they look nice. We're going to have a green pepper that we're also going to cut into cubes, I'm going to call it. But we're going to vein it and seed it, right? Take on all the goop on the inside. Make sure little seeds are gone. We're going to cube that. We're going to have a red pepper. We're going to do the same thing. We're going to cut it into nice cubes, nice medium-sized pieces. But first, we're going to vein it and seed it. And if you want to make this an adventure recipe, you could add some nuts. Don't do it if it's your safe recipe, especially since a lot of people are allergic to nuts, especially peanuts. So we're going to make nice slices out of our chicken breasts. Or you can cube them if you want, whichever you think looks better. The slices kind of look nice in a stir fry, but you don't have to. And now we're going to take a nice size bowl and we're going to combine the soy sauce, the cornstarch, the ginger, the sugar, and we're going to add the chicken to it and we're going to toss it all around to coat it. Personally speaking, I know a lot of people use a baggie for that. They put the coating in a baggie and they mush the chicken around in the baggie, kind of work it around. I like to use the bowl. I think it coats more evenly. So you can do as you please, but we're going to coat it. And we're going to take out our skillet or our wok, if you've got such a thing. Skillet works just fine. And we're going to put the oil in, and we're going to add the green onions and the red and the green peppers. And we're going to stir-fry them until they're cooked through but still crisp, because we want to have kind of a nice crunch to it, but not raw anymore. It takes about 3 minutes. And we're going to stick the vegetables in a bowl now. You're going to get them out of there. Or else, if you have a really hot, well, I think you should take them out, because otherwise they'll be there too long when you're doing the chicken. So we're going to add a little bit more. That was half the oil, right? We're going to add the other half of the oil. And we're going to add our chicken, which is coated, right? And we're going to cook it thoroughly through. That takes about 3 minutes too, right? See, this is why you can do it while we have the group, because it is smells wonderful. It is all delicious. and it is all sizzly. But it only takes, 5 minutes, 6 minutes? Not long. The key to the chicken part is you want it to be cooked through thoroughly. That's why you don't make real thick pieces. I like to make strips. They look nice and they cook faster. You want it to be cooked through and you want it to cook pretty fast. Chicken's all nice and cooked through, all delicious. We now put the vegetables back in just to make sure they're hot. And it's done. It was fast. It was delicious. It didn't take very long, right? We made it all together. It smelled nice in the room. Excellent. All done. That is our safe recipe. And yes, of course, you can revise it in any way you like, but it is a very simple recipe. And if you have all the pieces, all the ingredients kind of ready, and you mix the mixture for the chicken and like that, you can do it as a group. Well, all right. People are arguing that it's not really as a group because they're really watching you do it. Well, yeah, but it's still, it's a fun thing to do to watch somebody cook something delicious and then get to eat it. Why not? Good idea. So there we have it. That is our safe recipe. We will please label it and say what is in it so that everyone can know if they can eat it. Yeah, the only thing about it is probably the soy sauce. So now we're going to go on to our adventure recipe. What makes this an adventure recipe? Well, it's got fish in it. And a lot of people are actually allergic to fish. Now, I gave a tuna casserole, kind of my favorite one, a while back. And I was informed, and thank you for all of your interest, that it was kind of an American recipe because I did the very traditional thing that Americans do. I used condensed cream of mushroom soup as part of the base. And it is true that that's not something that's available everywhere. And it was kind of, well, people accused it of cheating, but it was kind of, it's a kind of an old-fashioned thing to do. But yeah, it's not something that's available, and I added it as though I thought everybody could get such a thing. And really, that's not true now, is it? So we're going to have a tuna casserole that does not use the cream of mushroom soup. However, I must confess I am going to use frozen vegetables. Oh, well. If you don't want to use frozen vegetables, yours will come out better than mine. It's just very convenient and very inexpensive for me to do it. And you must be sure, of course, that they're cooked through. But if you use frozen, like I'm going to do, you need to defrost them and pat them down so that they don't have all those ice crystals that adds water to your recipe. A bad thing. So here we go. We're going to have a half cup of chicken stock, a package of cut green beans, frozen cut green beans. Pat them down if you're using frozen. If not, use real green beans. That'll be delightful. Let's have a nice big chopped onion. About a cup of sliced mushrooms. This also makes it the adventure recipe. People don't eat mushrooms. Four big stalks of chopped celery. Lovely in there. 3 garlic cloves that we're going to mince up. People accuse me of using too much garlic. If you think that's true, for heaven's sakes, use less. 4 teaspoons of cornstarch. About 1.5 cups of milk. Do not cheap out and do not use the low-fat stuff. I actually have a tendency to use 1/2 and 1/2, which is even more delicious. But at least use whole milk. And 1/2 cup of cheddar cheese. Let's make 3/4 cup of cheddar cheese. If you don't want it to be orange, use Swiss, but it makes it more bitter. I'm going to use 1/4 cup of mayonnaise in here, just because it gives it a nice creaminess and it really tastes delicious. We, of course, need noodles, right? A big package, what is that, about 3 cups of noodles that you're going to cook al dente and drain really, really well. Yeah, you can't put, you got to cook them first, right, and drain them really well. I like, because I'm not big on the messiness, if you're going to have a bunch of people over, I think pasta that is like shells or individual pieces and not long noodles is preferable. I know the noodles is more traditional and it probably looks prettier, but I personally don't like long noodles. They're too hard to handle dishing out and eating. People, nice people that are not being mean, make a mess if you've got long noodles. So I say use piece, like a rotini or a shell or something like that. That's just me. Yes, I think the bow tie ones are cute. Yes. So anyway, whatever kind of pasta you've got, let's cook it and drain it and get about 3 cups of it because we need lots. Let's have 2 cans, about 12-ounce cans of tuna. We're going to drain it really, really well. We're going to use the kind of tuna that comes in water and not in oil, and we're going to flake it. Yes, I suppose people asking about real tuna, about fresh tuna. Don't see why not. In my area, that would be very expensive to do. The key is that it needs to be cooked because cans of tuna are really cooked. You can just eat them, right? And we're going to have about half a cup of dry breadcrumbs. In this area, you can buy them pre-breadcrumbed, so to speak. You can buy them as breadcrumbs with flavor. If you're going to do that, I personally like the Parmesan flavor just because it adds a little bit of cheese on the top. Yay! And a couple tablespoons of butter. Yeah. Don't use margarine. Use butter. Okay. We are going to add the chicken stock, the green beans, the onion, the mushrooms, the celery, and the garlic cloves all together, and then going to bring them to a boil. And we're going to bring that and boil it. Then we're going to reduce the heat and simmer it for what, about 5 minutes until the vegetables are tender. Now, we're going to take a little whisk. Actually, secretly, I use a fork. It's just easier. And we're going we're going to combine the cornstarch and the milk. And we're going to, you can't just throw them in. You've got to combine them first in a little bowl and whip them until they're smooth. A little whisk, a fork, something like that. You combine them until they're smooth and there's no lumps in the cornstarch. So you combine the cornstarch with the milk, and now you're going to add it to the vegetable mixture. Do it kind of slow, stirring constantly. Bring it to a boil for about 2 minutes until the stock gets kind of thickened. That's what we're doing. Yes, we're kind of making the condensed soup. Well, anyway, so you thicken the stock. You've now got the hot stock with the vegetables in it, right? And the garlic and everything. And you've added the cornstarch and the half and half, which you mix together beforehand. You've added them kind of slowly. You've stirred constantly. You've brought it back to a boil a couple of minutes. It's starting to thicken. It all looks lumpy. We're going to remove it from the heat, and we're going to stir in the cheese and the mayonnaise until the cheese is melted. Very lovely. So we've got the cheese and the mayonnaise now in there. Everything's melted. It's all nice and non-lumpy. It's a good way of saying it, but it's really the truth, right? Now we've got those noodles that have been sitting to the side. We've drained them really well, and they're cooked. They're all al dente. They look real nice, and they're all ready to go, the pasta. We're going to put the noodles and the tuna into our mixture, into our hot mixture. We're going to stir it all around, and we're going to pour it whole thing into a baking dish. What, about 3-quart baking dish. And we're going to sprinkle the breadcrumbs on the top, some of the butter, dot it with the butter. And we're going to bake this whole thing at 350 for about half an hour. Yum. It comes out really hot. So let it, and also let it stand for a few minutes after you take it out. Because A, it's extremely hot, and B, if you let it stand, it'll kind of get more together, make it thicker so it's easier to serve. It'll kind of make it blend together better. Yes, so be careful of the extreme hotness, because you don't want to serve this too hot and have people burn their mouths. That is our adventure recipe. It has mushrooms, first of all, and tuna. People asking all kinds of different kinds of vegetables. I don't see why not. I like green beans just because traditionally it's got green beans. But, yeah, you can use mixed vegetables. For heaven's sakes, you can buy those frozen too, can't you? Let's think about this. Mixed vegetables. Yeah, don't see why not. Although they might be a little softer consistency than green beans. Don't want them to fall apart because you are cooking them. And, yes, you can use canned mushrooms too. I'm afraid that I use that too. And they are really quite nice. I think they should go in a little bit less in the boiling because they're soft to begin with and drain and pat them very, very well. So that is our adventure recipe. Very delicious. Everybody likes it. Comes out looking really, really nice. And we are nearly out of time, as I see. And I wanted to thank all of you for coming. Thank you for returning. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. If you would like to contact us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is recipeforpeacenow.com. If you would like to hear prior shows, the most recent five, the last five, including this one, pretty much as soon as we get off the air, are archived at the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for listening. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.